The following show comes to you via Digital Radio 103. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual presenters and guests do not necessarily reflect those of this station, the station's network, any other affiliates under this network, or our sponsors.
Everyone, welcome to the Blurred Line. Happy Wednesday and happy holidays. Busy time coming up tonight. I am joined by Paul Crandall.
Good evening, ma'am.
This is becoming a habit.
Yes. A bad habit.
Yes, hard habit to break. Let me go for all the Chicago songs. So tonight I'm very, very excited. Paul and I had talked about this topic a few different times, and he had me watching videos, which we'll get into. And very excited to have Eric Altman on the show tonight. He is the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you very much.
So you have tons and tons of experience investigating field work.
No, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Only like over 29 years.
Just a little bit.
Not like those show-offs on the TV show then. Then we're talking about the real deal here. Here's a guy who's out there working it and doing it. Is that what you're saying there, Sue?
Yes.
Okay, good. Excellent. Great guest to have on tonight. And yeah, you and I were talking about the Bigfoot thing the other night. So, yeah. Awesome.
These interesting videos that we can ask Eric his opinion on. Eric, how did you get into researching?
That goes back a long, long time. actually, about 32 years ago, I was about 10 years old. I guess the best way to put it is I was a fan growing up of the science fiction movies. I'm sure you guys are familiar with, like, the giant spider that attacked the Earth, or the invasion of the body snatchers, the day the Earth stood still, those kind of science fiction movies that were often shown, usually on Sunday afternoons. I called them drive-in movies because that's usually where you'd find them. Mm-hmm. And a big fan of science and horror fiction movies. And there were two that were played when I was about 10 years old, one of them being Legend of Boggy Creek and the other being Creature from Black Lake. And the synopsis of both those movies, the Creature from Black Lake was a fictional movie about two anthropology students who traveled south to the northeastern panhandle of Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, that area there, where they went looking for a hair-covered hominid creature, the missing link, basically. And they had a run-in with him, and it was an unpleasant run-in. They ended up getting attacked and hurt. And I thought it was a really cool movie. The other movie, Legend of Boggy Creek, was what I call a docudrama. It was a fictional movie, but it was based on true things and true events that happened in the small, sleepy town of Falk, Arkansas in the 1960s. And this movie was released by Charles Pierce in the early 1970s. And again, this was a hominid-like creature, Bigfoot, as we're familiar with, but a very aggressive type of creature that lived and haunted the swamps of Falk, Arkansas. They call it Boggy Creek, or the Sulphur River bottoms. And it scared a lot of townsfolk down there. And it was a small town, only about 400 people, and there's still only about 400 people that live in Falk. And the movie, it was retelling their stories and their encounters with this creature. And Charles Pierce did a great job of getting these folks who actually experienced these horrifying events to star in the movie. So the people you see in the movie were actually the people who had these encounters.
Wow.
And
you can definitely tell they're not actors. I've seen the film, and they definitely come off. Hollywood would never have gotten anybody like this to ever be in the film. These are the real people. They've got dirt under their nails. They've got. In fact, I watched that film about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so. It's one of my favorites.
It is great. It is great.
Yeah, that's what kicked off my interest in the Bigfoot phenomenon. Now, I had an interest in the whole paranormal phenomenon back then as a kid. I thought UFOs were cool, and ghosts and hauntings and all kinds of cryptid creatures. But I really wasn't into the Bigfoot thing until I started, I saw these movies. From there, I hit the local library. I dove into the books, the magazines, the newspaper articles, anything I could digest on subject of cryptozoology, Bigfoot, Mothman, the Loch Ness Monster, anything not normal. I was diving into and reading and engulfing and just really trying to learn about all these strange and unusual mysteries. And as I started reading these books and magazines and newspaper articles, I was literally shocked to find out in my hometown of Greensburg, Pennsylvania, just 7 or 8 years prior to me getting interested in the subject, there was probably the largest outbreak of Bigfoot sightings that ever took place in the United States.
Jeez.
And that occurred in 73 and 74. And some of these sightings took place literally miles from where I was growing up at, my home street, my house. And it blew me away. And I also found out at that time that there was a researcher by the name of Stan Gordon that still resided in Greensburg that was still investigating these Bigfoot reports. So from that point on, I made it my goal to meet Stan and to devour his research, to learn as much as I could about him, what he was doing, following up on all these sightings that were going on in my neighborhood, my town, my hometown. And when I was about 13, I finally had the chance to meet Stan. Now, Stan did something pretty cool, which for me it was cool, and the local townsfolk it was cool. We had a mall called Greengate Mall, and once a summer, for a weekend, he would take his UFO and Bigfoot exhibit out to this mall and put on a display for the public. And he'd have artifacts, photos, newspaper articles, and even some evidence, casts and stuff like that. And he would set this display up at the mall and show this stuff off for everybody to come and check out. And I'd beg my parents to take me out there. They'd drop me off, and I'd literally spend the whole weekend out there just bugging the crap out of Stan and picking his brain, asking him questions, going over every report, going over every cast, learning as much as I could. And from that point on, it's just snowballed, and I've been trapped and can't get out of it.
That sounds really cool that he was indulged a child. You know what I mean? You see so many people that don't want to take the time, and that's really cool.
He's been my mentor since the age of 13 for, 30 years now. And Stan and I are very close friends. We investigate and have investigated cases together, which is awesome for me because that's like a baseball hero, mm-hmm. It's fantastic to get out with him in the woods and going to investigate these cases. When he gets a call from the police or someone, he's very well known, obviously. He's been doing it for 53 years. And when he gets a call, he calls me up and says, "Hey, Eric, we got a hot lead on a Bigfoot report. Do you want to go?" And I pack my equipment up and I pick him up in the car and off we go and we go out and check it out. So it's cool to have your mentor in the field with you, teaching you things that he still does and he knows. And I incorporate that. And I've actually taken what he's taught me. And when I did my conferences and my Bigfoot exhibits and conferences, lectures and stuff like that, when I have kids come up to me and ask me questions, I never have a problem engaging with them, sharing information with them, answering any questions they might have. So I kind of pay it forward.
Yeah.
I guess the first question I would have for you is with the research that you guys have done, in your opinion, does Bigfoot exist? I guess that'd be the first place I'd like to start, is get your opinion on looking at the available evidence that you've gathered. What do you think?
Well, to be honest with you, I can't say that Bigfoot does indeed exist. And I'll be honest with you, I have not seen one for myself, nor has Stan for that matter. He'll be the first to tell you. I've seen a lot of very interesting evidence. I've talked to hundreds of eyewitnesses. I've been on hundreds of cases. I've read thousands of reports. I've been almost all over the country looking into hot spots and areas where there's been sightings and activity. I'm convinced there's something out there. There's something to the Bigfoot phenomenon. What it is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I've found prints at sighting locations. We've found hair, which we've sent off to Dr. Jeff Meldrum. I've experienced rock throwing, hearing screams. I think on the last show I was on, I played some very interesting mm-hmm. sounds for you guys.
Yeah.
I've experienced a lot of strange phenomenon in the forest. I can't honestly say that was Bigfoot, but it's some very unusual activity that I've never experienced. And being a seasoned outdoorsman, hunter, fisherman, camper, a lot of things that I can't relate to common wildlife. But I'm convinced there's something to this phenomenon. It's been going on for thousands of years. I just can't say that Bigfoot really exists.
Yeah, I believe that I would agree with you. I think I would find it difficult to believe that so many people over time had all came up with very similar or sometimes almost identical stories to try to right. describe what it is that they've seen. So, yes, I would accept that there is something that is going on out there. Very definitely.
Yeah, I'm in the mindset of people can't all be lying and fabricating things. They can't all be misidentifying things. They can't all be hoaxing things. Even if one report out of the thousands of reports that have come in are legitimate, to me that says there is something truly out there. Right. What it is, we're still trying to figure that out.
We, Sue and I were talking the other day. When we were talking about the guy who had actually done the investigation about missing persons, mm-hmm. and he had noticed that there was a phenomenon that seemed to be at least somewhat related, at least geographically, if nothing else, seemed to be closely related to Bigfoot sightings. And I was going to ask our guest tonight if you have ever heard of any of Bigfoots ever being dangerous, of them ever engaging in any kind, among the people that you've interviewed, have you heard of them engaging in behavior that seemed like it was a threat or could have been conceived or perceived as a threat to the people involved, or anything like that ever come up?
Well, there are some cases that have been reported over time. There's a famous Bauman case that was documented and written in the book by our former president, Teddy Roosevelt. He wrote in the book Wilderness Hunter. The Bauman story is about two trappers that went into the mountains of southern Idaho, and one of the trappers was killed supposedly by one of these wild men of the forest back in the 1850s. Now, you have to remember, Bigfoot didn't get his name Bigfoot until 1958, so at that time, there was no coined term for Bigfoot. They called it the wild man. And they had encounters with this wild man, and unfortunately, their encounters ended up pretty tragic. The body of one of the trapper, Bauman's partner, was found with a huge fang marks, bite marks in his neck, and his neck was broken, and huge human-like prints around the body. So that had that happened in the 1850s, according to the trapper Bauman, and it's in the Wilderness Hunter book written by Teddy Roosevelt. In 1924, Fred Beck wrote in his book Battle with the Mountain Devils out of Mount St. Helens of having an overnight battle with these hair-covered mountain devils, as he called them. And they attacked the cabin. They tried to break into the cabin by raining boulders down from a cliff above, by pounding on the walls of the cabin, trying to break through the cabin door. And meanwhile, the miners that Fred Beck was with, the prospectors in the cabin, had to fight them off by shooting through links and chinks in the logs of the cabin, you know, shooting blindly in the night to try to drive these creatures off. That siege went on all night, and that's how the name of this canyon got its name, Ape Canyon, out in Mount St. Helens. There have been these rare cases over time, like the two examples I gave you, where there have been attacks. And most of them that I'm familiar with have been provoked, where the human has shot at or done something to anger the creature. Thus, in turn, the creature does something defensive back or in an aggressive manner back as a retaliation kind of thing. Some of these disappearances, you were speaking about the missing people. Dave Pilates wrote two books about, they call it the 411.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the fellow that we were discussing. We were looking at his, we were looking at a video that we'd seen on YouTube.
Right. Yeah. They're very interesting books. And although he doesn't allude to, the missing people as being kidnapped or taken away by Bigfoot, they're very interesting cases.
Yes.
But I'm not aware of any cases where Bigfoot has actually come and taken someone from the woods other than the Albert Osman case, which took place again in 1924 in the Toba Inlet of British Columbia, where Albert went camping. He went prospecting in an area where he was told not to go by the natives. Went in anyways, and after 3 days of camping there, he was kidnapped by a male Bigfoot, taken to a ravine where there was a male, a female, and two offspring that held him captive in this ravine for 7 days. That's the only case that I'm familiar with where a Bigfoot has actually kidnapped somebody.
Interesting. So,
yeah, there's been cases, alleged cases, where people claim that Bigfoot's shown aggressive behavior. The rock throwing, for example, that's something that seems to happen to researchers and people in the forest. I wouldn't call that aggressive behavior. I call it more of a kind of like a intimidation or a kind of like a get out of here. This is my kind of territory.
The territorial
thing.
Stuff.
You know, it's kind of it's almost like a defensive mechanism to drive away people in the creature's territory. Like you're encroaching on my property. You're encroaching on my turf. So I don't want you here. I'm going to throw rocks at you to try to drive you off.
Yeah, like if I saw somebody just hanging out in my backyard, be like, yeah. Excuse me, what are you doing?
Yeah. Now, as far as I'm aware of, and this is just me talking, I don't know if I've ever really spoken with other people to confirm it or not, I've never seen a Bigfoot pick up a rock and throw it at anybody. Of course, I've never seen a Bigfoot, but I don't know of any reports of anybody claiming that Bigfoot's actually picked up a rock and thrown it. There are reports of these rocks coming through the forest where people have claimed to have encountered Bigfoots. They say, oh, yeah, the rocks were coming at me, you know, and they almost hit me. It had to be a Bigfoot. Now, my question is, well, did you see the Bigfoot throw the rock? Well, no. Then how do you know?
Right.
You said you've experienced some rock throwing. Mm-hmm. As well. What types of rocks are we talking about? Are we talking like boulder size, baseball size, little tiny pebbles?
A variety, actually. There have been several cases where, and again, I can't not say that Bigfoot did this. All I can tell you is what we experienced. And in these cases, we've experienced them. We've been in very remote locations where we have not told anyone where we're going, different times in the night or day. And we've had different size rocks thrown at us. We've had sticks thrown at us from the trees. And the rocks have ranged in size from, I would say, the size of an acorn to the size of a little bit bigger than a softball.
It's a big hand.
Yeah. And what amazes me is, and I'm going by pure speculation here because I'm assuming that it was either a person or it had to be a person or a Bigfoot. That's the only two logical explanations because I know a deer can't pick up a softball sized rock and throw it. Something has to have an opposable thumb to throw a rock. So it's speculation on my part, but to be in the woods at 3 o'clock in the morning, standing on a logging road or a trail and to have a rock thrown at you and miss you by mere feet and hear the rock hit the ground and bounce and be able to see that rock on the ground and know that it came from deep and thick brush where your party's all accounted for, it's either got to be another person in the woods trying to get you out of the woods, or it's got to be a Bigfoot. That's the only two possible explanations.
Just for the next time it happens to you, though, just go over and pick it up and make sure that and take it to someplace, because if it turns out to be a meteorite, they're worth quite a bit. So.
Do they go sideways?
No, I don't believe so. But you know, maybe Bigfoot uses meteors to throw, so perhaps he could still be able to make some money off of the thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to be right though, sir. There's it's got to be something there. It's either a human who's playing around with you, mm-hmm. doing a prank, or it's something that we don't know about that can pick up objects.
Yeah, and it may not be a Bigfoot. It might be something completely unrelated, but. Whatever it is, it has to be able to pick up that rock and throw it. And I don't know. I know for a fact a deer can't do that. A bear can't do that. A possum, a raccoon, a small forest animal can't do that. I don't know of any forest animal that can do that.
We would probably be back to something like escaped orangutans or gorillas or monkeys. Well, I'm just throwing out.
Yeah.
Possibilities critics might say. But whatever it is, it would have to be something that would be of the primate family.
Yes.
In order to be able to manipulate, as far as we know, Either that or space aliens or something.
I was going to say aliens or something.
Yeah. I mean, it couldn't be just a regular wildlife.
Right. Now, I had a very interesting conversation with Esteban Sarmiento. He's a primatologist from the Historical Museum out of New York, the American History Museum. He and I were talking about primate behavior. And I asked him, I said, do chimpanzees throw things? And he said, yes, they do. They throw things at predators. And I found that very interesting because there's a primate that throws sticks and rocks at predators to get them to leave. Now, as far as I'm aware, and I very well could be wrong on this, the areas that we've gone into don't have chimpanzees running around the forest.
Yes.
You know, I've looked into, and our group has looked into, wild exotic pet populations and animal ownership and zoos in those areas, and as far as we're aware of, there aren't any. So it seems unlikely. I can't rule out that possibility, but it seems unlikely there'd be a chimpanzee in the forest.
Extremely so. And I would imagine if he heard you guys kind of, and you'll pardon me, bumbling around in the forest, he probably would go the other direction, I would assume.
More than likely.
Rather than confront you. So.
Right. So we awesome. Don't really know what's throwing the rocks at us. It's speculation.
Probably pretty good speculation. When you have gone and investigated around, I'm assuming you guys hung around until daylight and then looked around. Have you ever come across the telltale Bigfoot, the footprints, anything like that?
We know it's been very rare that we've found footprints in the ground where we can definitely say they were Bigfoot tracks. Here in Pennsylvania, especially, the ground is really not conducive for good footprints, especially prints that leave good toe definition and the clear definition of a bare footprint. The ground is very hard. There's a lot of leaf clutter and debris on the ground. We have a lot of shale, coal, clay. The ground's very, very hard. We don't get a rainfall like the Pacific Northwest does, where the ground is very soft. It's a very different type of climate out there, almost like a rainforest climate out there where the ground is very soft and very much more conducive to tracks out there. Here in Pennsylvania, I can walk through the woods. Just to give you an example, I know people in our group that weigh 300 pounds that have walked through the woods with boots and not left a trace. Yeah. So us finding prints, unless the ground condition is just perfect, and I'm talking a mud pit or a sand pit, or someplace where it just rained and it's just soft enough to leave a good impression, it's very unlikely and very rare that we do find tracks.
That's very interesting. You are also chairperson for the East Coast Bigfoot Conference. I saw on your website. Mm-hmm. Have lots and lots of experience with Bigfoot. And I almost wish we hadn't gone to break because we had such a great extension of the conversation, and I just may have to make everybody repeat themselves because so can we just play that back?
Yeah. let's just rewind and do that. Why don't we pick something else actually?
Sure.
Well, I'm not sure didn't he say that he can't talk about that?
Oh no, not all of it.
But actually, I looked on their website too. I guess while you were looking there too, you guys are going to be featured in a movie. Is that correct, Mr. Altman?
We have a movie coming out in early 2013. It's in post production right now. It's called Mountain Devil: The Search for Frank Peterson. It is a direct to DVD movie done by Raw Footage Films. And as a matter of fact, I was just talking to the director before I came online with you guys tonight. It's kind of like the Legend of Boggy Creek, actually. I think it pays kind of homage to that. It's a fictional movie based on historical reports that happened here in Pennsylvania. And a lot of it's taken from the book The Creature, written by Jan Clement, which occurred in southwestern Pennsylvania back in the 1970s. And it's mixed in with documentary footage that includes myself and other members of the PA Bigfoot Society showing us in the field, doing our field research both day and night, actually doing research and on our night observations and some of the strange things that we've encountered. And he's filmed literally hundreds of hours of footage with us in the woods. And he's in post-production, and just talking with Ryan, the director, not too long ago, he was telling me, he said, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it done by early 2013. We have enough to actually do the movie and then do another documentary and probably do a sequel to it on top of it. He's got so much footage. But it was a lot of fun doing the film. The Bigfoot costume in the movie is excellent. The premise of the story is about two Bigfoot researchers, one of them named Frank Peterson, that has an obsession looking for Bigfoot in the mountains of southwestern Pennsylvania. And he goes to a cabin where supposedly this Bigfoot has been seen and has an encounter with the creature. He goes looking for it, gets more than he bargains for, and ultimately disappears. But they never say how he disappears or what happens, kind of a suspense type of thing. And they try to, you know, have the viewer of the movie draw your own conclusion. Was he killed by the Bigfoot? Was he captured by the Bigfoot? No one really seems to know. And that's the premise. I don't want to give away too much, but right. That's the general premise of what happens in the movie. And it's mixed in with documentary footage, interviews with myself and other Bigfoot researchers, eyewitnesses who've actually seen the creature, have had actual encounters, and gets people into the woods with us and shows folks what we're doing in the woods, kind of like a companion piece, you know, side by side with us. And there's some good reenactments with us. Stan Gordon's in the film, taking people around to sighting locations that were hot in the 1970s, 72, 73 and 74, excuse me, and going out with me, and I show them where sightings took place and, you know, retelling the stories. And it's going to be a great film. I really think it's going to be a lot of fun for people to watch. And it's a family movie, too. It's not blood and gore and naked women running around and drinking beer and it's not one of those typical horror films. It's going to be a good, suspenseful movie with the documentary mixed in.
That they don't have any of those features in Legend of Boggy Creek either, and I still would put Legend of Boggy Creek up there as one of the creepier films I've seen for just pure suspense, because the realism, you can tell the people are being very sincere when they're telling the story. I would love to see a 2000s version of Legend of Boggy Creek. So I'm gonna hold my breath and hope that this is going to be that. So
I'm gonna have me too. Watch both of them because I have not ever seen Legend of Boggy Creek. And
If you do, it's a mood kind of film. You need to actually turn down the lights and make sure you're alone in the house. It's kind of thing you really want to do that. So, you know, try to do that. Don't have a big party with a bunch of people or anything. It just spoils the mood. So by yourself, lights turned off. Yeah, good idea.
Do it in the late spring, early summer, where you can open the windows.
Oh, perfect. Yes, exactly.
Hear the crickets outside and hear a little twig snap every now and then.
Yeah.
It's great. Ambiance for like that. Yeah. Perfect. we were talking about Legend of Boggy Creek. Did you ever see a film, and I'm not sure if I should even mention, or the TV show, I'm not sure I should mention their name, but I'll say what state it was in. There was a group of people that were investigating in eastern Oklahoma, and they had a little TV program that they did where they chronicled going there, and it was Bigfoot City. Let me just say it like that.
Yes, something. I've seen it.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. The first time I ever saw it was to look and see just where Falk, Arkansas is, and then compare the distances involved between it and where they claimed that there were things going on in eastern Oklahoma. Not terribly far away.
No, not at all.
From one another. Right. Have you ever traveled? What's the furthest you've traveled? Are you strictly a Pennsylvania researcher, or have you traveled to other states before to investigate?
I've been to northeastern Texas and over in Falk. I have not been to Oklahoma. I'm hoping to one day. I've been in the Pacific Northwest, to Northern California, Oregon, Washington State. I've been out in the Midwest, down to Tennessee and Kentucky, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida. I've been around the country. Oklahoma, unfortunately, is at one place that I have been, and I'd love to get down to that area because from that TV show, Bigfoot City. and seeing that, I know that area down there has been a hot spot for quite some time, and they still have stuff going on down there. And that whole area, that Oklahoma, Texas, Panhandle. It's all that Ozarks Mountain right there. Missouri is part of the Ozarks, and that was big in the 70s with Momo, the Missouri Monster.
Yes.
And, you know, that whole area down there has had sightings for decades. It's a it's crazy down there, crazy with sightings and activity. And I'd love to get the opportunity to go down there, but I have not been to that area. But I've been around other parts of the country. I haven't gotten out as much as I'd like to or spend as much time as I'd like to in some of these places. I was able to spend a good couple of weeks out in the Pacific Northwest. And that to
be
me
awesome.
That's my Valhalla. You know,
yeah.
That's where I want to be. I love Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is rich with lore and history and sightings today. But compared to Northern California and Oregon, it can't. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And when you walk out there, you get out of the car, and this is no exaggeration. When you get out of the car and you look at those mountains, you can't just think to yourself, if Bigfoot's anywhere, it's here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's so much more accepted out there in the Pacific Northwest. Like in the town of Willow Creek, where I spent about 3 or 4 days, they've got a Bigfoot museum. They have the Bigfoot motel. They've got the Bigfoot sub shop. Bigfoot.
So it's like Roswell for Bigfoot.
Yeah, it really is. And you can walk around town and visit these little shops. And they got Bigfoot murals painted on buildings, Bigfoot statues. And Happy Camp, Northern California, is like that too. There's a 20-foot tall Bigfoot statue in the center of town. The post office has a wooden carved Bigfoot statue right out in front of the post office. I mean, it's very well accepted. It's almost like a tourist trap, really.
Yeah. That is interesting.
It's great out there. I love it.
So you have an event coming up in a couple of months in West Virginia at Cabela's.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit?
Sure. It is, I'm trying to think if it's the fourth annual or third annual. It's somewhere in there. A few years ago, Cabela's reached out to myself and a few other Bigfoot investigators in the tri-state region, and wanted to put together an event called Strange, Rare, and Unusual Sightings Weekend. And they wanted to bring in, as they call them, experts. I disagree because there really are no experts in the field, but they wanted to bring in people of authority to talk to the public about some of these strange cases and strange sightings that are taking place, whether they be mountain lions, which are said not to exist in Pennsylvania, or albino deer, albino creatures that people are seeing, whether it be raccoon or any type of albino wildlife. Bigfoot, of course, thunderbirds, just different animals that people are claiming to see, and something that it's rare, but people are still having these sightings. So they wanted to put together just a little two-day symposium to have lecturers come in and do presentations for the general public. And it started out pretty small. The first couple of years, we had 20 or 30 people show up for the event, and it's grown over size over the few years. And this year's event coming up is going to be a huge one. They're really putting a lot of money and effort into the event. And it's going to take place February 16th and 17th at the Cabela's in Tridelphia, West Virginia, which is just outside of Wheeling. Wheeling, West Virginia. It's they're looking to possibly push it to 3 days, but right now they're definitely set on 2 days, and it's going to feature five speakers, and four of them I can name. One I can't yet because we're waiting to do the big announcement once we have the confirmation and everything's finalized. But it'll consist of Stan Gordon, of course, Pennsylvania UFO and Bigfoot researcher. It'll consist of Billy Willard. He is a Bigfoot researcher. He runs the Sasquatch Watch of Virginia group out of Manassas, Virginia, a very dear friend of mine. One of my group's Western PA directors, David Dragazin. He's also our forensic sketch artist. He draws sketches of what eyewitnesses tell him they saw.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he draws a little sketch of what they claim they saw. He's going to be showing some of the sketches of people, you know, claim these creatures they saw and talking about some of the sightings. And I'll be speaking on Bigfoot and some of the recent cases and investigations that our group has done over the last couple of years in Pennsylvania and around the area. And the keynote speaker has been confirmed, but unfortunately we can't announce who he is yet. But he is a very big name in the Bigfoot research field, and probably everybody would recognize who he is if I mentioned his name, so I can't do it yet. But we will be announcing it on the website probably this coming Sunday. It should be pretty exciting once it is announced. But Cabela's is putting a lot of money into it to do advertising, promoting. It's a family event. It's free, absolutely free for everybody to attend. There's no charge. They invite everybody to come out and attend the event for that, at least the Saturday and Sunday right now. And they're talking about, and if we can get the movie done, premiering the new movie, Mountain Devil, The Search for Frank Peterson, on either Friday or Saturday evening.
Excellent.
They're going to have a town hall setting where folks who have had sightings and experiences and encounters can come to this town hall setting and share their experiences with the panel of speakers and other researchers who are on hand. They're going to have vendor tables, displays, items for purchase if they want to purchase like a Bigfoot cast or a T-shirt or a book, or you know, come out and meet some of the Bigfoot researchers and talk with them, ask questions. And it's just a lot of different family-oriented events for everybody to come out and check out.
That's really cool. And you had given the website to me in an email, so I just want to – I put it in the chat room, but I just wanted to give a shout-out. It is Cabela's Strange Sightings Weekend at – Cabela's Strange Sightings Weekend .weebly.com. So it's W-E-E-B-L-Y.com.
I think I figured out who the special guest is, actually. It's a live Bigfoot, isn't it?
That's no, you guessed it.
I knew this was going to happen sometime, that they were going to actually finally be able to. I knew they spoke English. I knew that they would be able to bring some. So that would be great. I'm now eagerly anticipating, you know, an actual live Bigfoot is going to be interviewed. That could be. This is world changing. So
we've taught him how to eat. We taught him how to sit up and roll over and play dead. And yeah, we've come a long way.
And hair care is, I'm thinking that's got to be an important, very much an
the
important.
The Bigfoot
thing.
Hair gel.
Yeah, well, that, you know, just maybe the learning to do a good braid, perhaps, or, you know, combing, you know, something
we'll do,
like
you
that.
Know, so, Bigfoot dreads.
It's a Bigfoot styling salon going to take place.
Very cool. It's kind of like Face Off, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Instead of gingham style, it's Bigfoot style. So,
there you go.
I was going to ask you, you were saying that you had been up in the Pacific Northwest. I heard many years ago that a county up there had actually made it a law that you were not supposed to shoot or in any other way attempt to harm a Bigfoot. What is your stance on the whole, shall we do harm to Bigfoot or not?
I'm against shooting or killing a Bigfoot creature just to prove it exists. I always have been. I think there's other ways to collect evidence to prove this animal exists. Just my take on it. There are groups out there who are pro-kill, that say we've got to sacrifice one of these creatures for the betterment of the whole species. And although they're right, one of these creatures does have to be presented to the scientific community, live or dead, for them to finally accept that this creature's real. I disagree with the scientific community. I think we can present enough evidence to conclusively say, yeah, there's something out there and we need to do further scientific study. I'm against the shooting one of these creatures. What if it's the last one of its kind? You know, they're so rare and there's the numbers are so small that I can't bring myself to go out there and shoot one of these things.
Yeah.
I have heard people say, no, go ahead, Sue.
No, go ahead.
No. Well, I was just going to comment that I'd heard it from hunters and things before. They'd interviewed people who'd been on hunting, said that they found it very difficult, that they had actually seen and had pointed their rifles at Bigfoot, but then could not bring themselves to shoot because it seemed to have such a human appearance. That,
right.
Go ahead, Sue. What was your question?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, we only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you what your most interesting experience was, scary, whatever you want to call it, intriguing.
I've had a couple. I'm trying to think of the most intense one I've had. Probably took place in October of 2008 at Salt Fork State Park in southeastern Ohio. I was over there to do a speaking presentation for a Bigfoot group, and I was in the woods with another fellow, a friend of mine, a fellow researcher, and we were at an area of the park. And this Salt Fork State Park has appeared on Monster Quest. It's been featured on Finding Bigfoot. It's been featured in several documentaries. It's a very well-known Bigfoot hotspot in southeastern Ohio. Many, many people have had sightings and encounters. And while there in the park, we decided to hit a couple of these so-called hotspots to see if we could find some Bigfoot researchers who were supposed to be out there. We had no intention of doing research, no intention of looking for anything, just to meet up with these researchers and hang out with them. Unfortunately, when we went out, we didn't run into them. We found a couple places we went to empty. So we decided to hang around these places. The first place we hung around at, we heard a few strange things. We heard some crashing in the woods. We heard some possible wood knocks coming from the forest, but we couldn't determine whether or not it was deer, bear, another researcher, because there's so many researchers out there in the forest and in that park. So we didn't hang around there very long. We went to another section of the park. About 3:30, quarter to 4 in the morning, we heard some very loud, very impressive screams come off a hillside that still to this day, when I hear them, they were recorded, the same types of screams were recorded a night later. We heard them again, and they were just so impressive. We heard very loud, and I wouldn't even call them wood knocks. I would call them huge thumps on the ground or thuds on the ground, like something was stomping its feet. And that was pretty intense in itself, but the real excitement came when we returned back to the first location we started the night at. We pulled into this place they call it the Handicap Picnic Area, and the reason is that it's a they have an accessible pavilion with built-in restrooms at the pavilion for handicapped folks accessible to get in there if they need to. And it's a very large open picnic area with a lot of picnic tables and a couple different pavilions. And there's been sightings at this area. There have been several encounters. We arrived there shortly after 4 o'clock in the morning and just decided to get out and walk into the picnic area and just stroll around and see if anything was going on. And we weren't more than 10 or 15 minutes there when something started throwing rocks at us. And we could hear them coming through the brush and through the trees and landing just a few feet in front of us. And the guy I was with was getting pretty worked up over this because he had never had rocks thrown at him before. And here I am giggling like a little schoolgirl. I was all excited about it. And finally, the last rock that came out of the trees, he claims was the size, he saw it was the size of a couch pillow cushion.
Oh, geez.
And it hit the ground and bounced about 4 or 5 times in front of us. I heard it hit the ground. I didn't see it, but he saw it. And that was enough to push him over the edge. He turned around, freaked out, ran right into me, knocked me over, ran to the car, and tried to force his way into the car. And of course, I always lock my car no matter where I go. So he's screaming at me from the car, leaving me standing in the picnic area a good 100 yards away, trying to figure out what the heck just happened. He's screaming at me, get in the car, let's get out of here, let's get out of here. I go back to the car, let him in. As I'm backing the car out with my high beams on, the high beams go across this set of brush at the very edge of the picnic area. And a dark figure, and this is the only way I can describe it, a dark figure or form appears to rise up from behind the bush, stands straight up, and as the high beams go across the front of it, I get a reflection of what appears to be bluish white eye shine.
Oh.
I stopped the car and went, oh my blankety blank. I pulled the car back in with the high beams right on that spot, and whatever was there was gone.
Oh, wow.
I jumped out of the car with a high-powered spotlight, and I put it right on that brush, and I'm shining, and I'm looking, and there was nothing there. I didn't see anything. I couldn't hear anything moving around. Meanwhile, Mike, my research partner friend in the car, screaming at me, freaking out, let's get out of here. I can't take anymore. This is too intense. So we left. I came back the next day to find the brush where I saw this thing. All the grass behind it was all matted down, all trampled down, and a huge pathway leading from the brush down a trail into the woods about 75 yards before I lost it. I walked around the woods for a good half an hour. I heard wood knocks coming from the forest that afternoon when I was looking around down in there. And I can't say that was a Bigfoot. Like I said earlier, I can't say if I saw a Bigfoot or not when we talked off air, but it's probably the closest I've come to seeing something. And Mike is convinced it was a Bigfoot. I still don't know what it was. It could have been a shadow off a tree. It could have been a shadow off of anything. It was just so quick as we backed out and just seeing it for two or three split seconds, wondering to myself to this day what the heck that was. Now, I know there was something there because that grass was trampled. There was a trail definitely leading away from the brush area down into the trees. So I know there had to be something there. What it was, I don't know. But it was interesting for me to find out, and it kind of validated that I did see something there. When I talked to Don Keating, who is a researcher in that area, and he actually does a lot of research in that park, told me that in August of that year, just a few months earlier, a woman who was at that same picnic area saw a Bigfoot creature standing directly behind that brush. I saw that figure rise up behind in August, just a few months earlier. And she got a real good look at this huge hair-covered creature from the back as it walked down the hillside into the brush and the trees. So that was kind of like a, well, maybe I did see a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You know, I can't honestly say what it was, but it was definitely something big, something dark, and it reflected eye shine back at me as the high beams went across the front of it just for a few split seconds.
About how tall do you think it was?
We went back, Dawn and I went back and actually did some measurement tests from where my car was parked. I stood and I actually got in the car and tried to do a reference test, and he used the stick to kind of, you know, measure how high it was. And we're guesstimating it was about 7.5 feet tall. So again, it could have been a shadow. It could have been anything. I really can't say, but with the validation of that woman's having the sighting in August and the rocks being thrown at us and finding that trampled grass leads me to believe that there definitely was something there.
Did you find any of the rocks? You said that a very large one had been thrown. Did you find that?
Surprisingly, no. That's one thing that really kind of puzzled me. When I went back the next day to look, I did not find any rocks large or small in that picnic area. And I scoured that picnic area. I was the only one in the park. There was another researcher in that area when I arrived, but he had left shortly after I got there. I walked all over the place looking for that big rock, the one I said was the size of the couch pillow cushion. I couldn't find anything. But Mike and I, we know we heard it hit the ground. Mike saw it. So, you know, something did hit the ground. Where it went, I don't know. I have no idea.
They may have come back and collected it. It could be that that was a favorite stone for some reason. Maybe it fits their hand well or something like that. So there could be a number of reasons why it disappeared.
Honestly, don't know. Yeah, it puzzled me. I looked around from thinking, okay, well, maybe it hit the ground and bounced and rolled a different way, or you know, maybe it was picked up by somebody else. I looked everywhere, and I could just not find any rocks to fit that size or, you know, what he claims he saw. I could not find anything.
It's very frustrating.
Yep.
Oh, that's a very interesting story. I myself have never, I grew up in the woods. I've never had an experience with seeing a Bigfoot, but I have had experience seeing a very large black cat. Very large. So that's always interesting to me to hear Bigfoot stories.
Yeah, we've speculated before on other shows about if Bigfoot might be, is he from this planet? Is he from this world in the sense of, is he coming here from another dimension, crossing maybe back and forth between our world and some other? So what is your opinion about the origins of Bigfoot, assuming that he does exist?
Well, to be honest with you, I used to think, and I used to be 100% that this animal was a terrestrial animal that just was undiscovered, whether it be a primate or a hominid or a relic human. That's what I used to think. I still believe that it very well might be, but without a body after all these years, without good conclusive evidence, you really have to start to wonder, what the heck are we dealing with here? And there are those cases where people say that the tracks just end for no reason. People, very credible people I've talked to, talk about this creature dematerializing right in front of them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm very good friends with a gentleman that I know is of sound mind and body. I mean, he's not delusional. He doesn't make off-the-wall claims. He's claimed he's watched this thing walk across the field and just completely dematerialize right in front of him.
Hmm.
And he has no explanation for it. And he didn't go out there and make all these crazy claims in public. He'd rather keep it quiet because he doesn't want people thinking he's nuts.
Right.
And I've had dinner with his family. I've spent many, many nights at his home. We've done research together. And he holds a 9-to-5 job, you know, wife and daughter. I mean, he's not crazy. And there's other people I've talked to over the years that have told me these things in confidence. And I don't think they're crazy either. We might be dealing with two different entities or two different beings. I honestly don't know. But my job as a researcher, I can't rule out these possibilities. I've got to look into every possibility there is. And if sure. whether or not I believe in it or not, I want to try to find out the truth. And whether I agree with the truth I'm looking for or not, I've got to be as objective as I can and search out every avenue. And that's what I'm trying to do. I can't say it's a terrestrial. I can't say it's extraterrestrial. I don't honestly know.
Heck, it might even be elemental. I mean,
it might. Yeah, it very well might. Just don't have the answers at this point.
Right.
They've had stories about other kind of creatures that are out there, too. I know that the Dog Man story, mm-hmm. it's been out there for a while. Mothman, other type of creatures like that. So you do begin to wonder after a while if people are actually seeing it. It seems as though they're reporting the same thing. They're not coming up with widely divergent stories about what they're seeing. They're describing something that looks like a wolfman type of creature. And we have those ancient legends that go back for many, many centuries about wolfmen. Where are they coming from? So, I mean, that's stuff we've speculated about wildly before.
Yeah. I honestly, at this point, I don't think anybody really has the answers. It's all speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's fun to talk about.
Oh, it's a blast. Yeah. And it's fun to research.
Yeah. I have been dying to get out there and just go on one investigation. I just think it'll be so interesting.
Well, I've taken paranormal researchers out with me who've never done a Bigfoot research or investigation, like Reverend Tim Shaw. I don't know if you know Tim mm-hmm. or not. And he had some experiences. He heard things in the woods that he can't explain, and he's a huge Bigfoot fan now.
Yeah.
And I've taken other paranormal researchers out, and they say to me, I don't know how you do this because it's so different than sitting in a house.
Yeah.
You know, you've got so much more going on around you out here, and it's so different.
And then there's so much more audio pollution. And
yeah. It's a different world.
Definitely.
But it's fun. Anytime you guys want to go, let me know, and I'll be happy to take you.
All right.
If I see one, I'll call you.
Please do.
I don't want to waste your time. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Eric, for coming on tonight. It was really nice to talk to you again, as always. Very
interesting. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Good, good. Well, everybody, we'll be back next week with some more interesting topics. Take a break. Enjoy the holiday. And enjoy your family.
We thank you for listening. The show which you have just heard is protected by international copyright laws, and all rights are reserved and as such may not be copied, recorded, or re-aired in any form whatsoever without written permission from the station's management.